It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Monday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. We've got Darris, Ryan, and Toby behind the scenes working hard on the show. We are looking forward to hanging with you until 6:30 today. There's a lot going on in DC sports. One of the big stories has been the exit of Kevin Willard, and we've got you covered with a couple of great guests today. At 3 o'clock, Tony Massenburg, he a Terp. I worked with him on an altcast watching the Wizards this weekend. Good dude. Chris Nockey, who is one of the voices of Maryland basketball on their radio calls, their color commentator, will be on the program at 6 o'clock today as well. Got a nice little show planned for you, Danny.
I have a quick question. Is my mic buzzing again?
I believe it is.
Cool. I'll be back in a sec.
Yep, your mic is buzzing. We'll have a weekend coming up where we can get it fixed, though. Don't worry. There's going to be a couple of days where there aren't shows going on, and we can get everything ironed out in the studio so that Danny Huhay can join me in the early parts of a program. Speaking of the weekend, a lot happened. Ovi, one goal closer to Alex Ovechkin. The Nats lose their series to the Phillies, but did avoid a sweep with a strong Mitchell Parker start. Another Nathaniel Lowe home run and the first Josh Bell home run of the season yesterday.
Their starting pitching's been excellent through three games. Excellent.
Like 17 and a third innings of two-run ball?
The starting pitching has been excellent. Not the pitching overall, but the starting pitching. If we could just...
We'll recap the weekend in a few.
Yeah.
I want to start, though, with the news of the day and Adam Peters, because the league meetings are taking place, the owners' meetings down at the Breakers. We were just in West Palm.
We were just there.
If we extended our stay just a week or two, we could have been there for the owners' meetings, because we were about 10 minutes from the Breakers where we were hanging out. It was a good time. Such a beautiful place. That entire palm tree-laden, sunny... Like, West Palm's a little bit complicated because block to block, you don't really know what you're getting into.
It's a bit of a coin toss. You know what I mean? You're not really sure. It's a roll of the dice at certain blocks. And then the next thing you're going, this is immaculate.
But West Palm Beach, the site of the NFL owners' meetings. We've got a lot to get into on the owners' meetings front, but I want to start with some of the Adam Peters content today. So let's begin with what Peters said about Jaden Daniels being a recruiting tool. This was Peters with Kay Adams on her show on FanDuel.
How big of a recruiting tool is Jaden Daniels? Because from my perspective as just a fan and someone who talks to players on television, they all love him.
Yeah.
They all want to play with him. Like, how key is he?
It's huge. It's huge. It was like last year when we hired DQ, all these players wanted to go play for him. Yeah. All these coaches wanted to go coach with him. And now getting a great quarterback like Jaden, a great young quarterback, who's not just a great quarterback, but a great person that people want to be around, that people want to play
dunk.
With. And now it's great. So that, I mean, you get a guy like Debo because of that. You get a guy like LT because of that, that want to come and play for us. So it makes our jobs a lot easier.
So I wonder, you know, how much of those two guys being in Washington is Daniels related? Clearly, they're more excited to be here because Jaden Daniels is the quarterback. But if Daniels is not the QB, they don't trade for Laremy Tunsil. Does he somehow stop that trade? I don't really believe that. The Debo Samuel one's interesting because there was a market there for him where it seemed like a couple teams were curious about his availability. And specific to just Debo again, I think Samuel had some say in where he was going to end up because he was going to be an agitator and kind of dictate some terms with San Francisco. So I'm more inclined to say when he comes out and tells you, I really like Jaden Daniels because I started watching him because Brandon Ayuk's his best buddy. And if Brandon Ayuk's his boy and Brandon Ayuk's my boy, then we're going to get together just fine. But the Tunsil thing, I don't think has anything to do with anything.
So I think that you could parse apart each individual person or signing that comes here and say, well, that's not totally Jaden Daniels. And I think people will dismiss that. The kind of like the entirety for part of it. The big theme is correct. Like, in other words, this is such a net positive that it's not the only reason Debo Samuel's here. Washington traded for him. They wanted him. They're going to give him some guaranteed money. You know, they converted his whatever. It's a good situation for him to thrive. It's not the only reason Laremy Tunsil's here. It's not the only reason Bobby Wagner signed here in Washington was that he likes Dan Quinn. It's not the only reason they were able to get Austin Eckler because Anthony Lynn on the coaching staff. But the point is, you keep doing that enough times, you win some of those, right? You're not just the team that has to pay the loser tax anymore. You can go market value, and it can be a tipping point. All of these things are so overwhelmingly positive that that's the big takeaway. So you're 100% right. I agree with you. I don't know that Laremy Tunsil would have gone, like if this was, Tampa for some reason needed the trade for him. I don't think it would have gone, you know, no, I don't see it. I'm only going to play with Jaden Daniels.
Also, unless I'm not remembering something, I don't think he had a no-trade clause. Like a team calls the Texans say okay, and now you're going to Washington. Where the Jaden Daniels element is in play, and it is a reality, in my opinion. He is a guy that everyone's going to want to play with, and you've got one of the cool kids, and he is going to be a recruiting tool. It's all true. I just think it's more in free agency. When you're courting a receiver, and we didn't really see them go out and sign a quality receiver this offseason, they kept Noah Brown internally. They brought in Michael Gallup externally, who didn't have much of a market, I wouldn't imagine, and the ties to Dan Quinn were probably a factor there. But that's where it's going to happen. When two teams want an offensive tackle, at right tackle to replace Andrew Wiley next offseason, and it's Washington and someone else, and that tackle goes, I'll take a million less, but I'm going to play with Jaden Daniels to try to get the Commanders over the top. That's when you can sell me on the Daniels got it done. But when you just picked up the phone and called the Texans about Laremy Tunsil, I'm not so sure. But the point is the point, and the point is true. They do have a recruiting weapon at quarterback for the first time in probably my lifetime. I mean, I guess it's possible that after the 99 season, someone wanted to play with Brad Johnson, but Dan had him benched 2 weeks into the next year, so I don't know what that guy was thinking if he came over here to play with Brad.
Seriously.
They just haven't had it, man, and they do now.
Like, you wonder if maybe Griffin had some of that rep going, but with the injury and the way that thing ended, it didn't turn out like this. I mean, this is I took one of the worst franchises in the sport to the NFC title game in year one. That cologne smells sweet right now.
Dan Quinn is also a bit of a recruiting weapon.
Yep.
That has been proven to be the case. For all of my issues with the overall philosophy of the defensive-minded head coach, what they banked on and were 1,000% right about was that he is so beloved around the league that he would be able to put together a great staff. And then he and that staff would then become recruiting assets. And that totally happened, whether it's Bobby Wagner wanting to come play for his linebackers coach, Ken Norton Jr., a former great player, or Austin Eckler wanting to come here because Anthony Lynn had coached him in L.A. And we could do 10 of those. I mean, there are examples all over the roster from last year, from this year. I just mentioned Gallup, who's got ties to a bunch of the people in the building because of the Cowboys. He is now a Cowmander, so to speak. So, yeah, they definitely do have some well-liked, successful people. And it's good to be popular. It is good to be in a place where people want to come to this building to work with you. The other thing that Adam Peters talked about today that I thought was really significant was we got an answer for him about trading draft capital to acquire veterans. Because the philosophy that he has discussed, he's made it very, very clear. He is a guy that wants to build through the draft as a GM. He said it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But the moves that they keep making over and over and over again are trades for veterans where they give up picks, which I have not had a problem with. But I know a lot of people have a hard time juxtaposing those two things. You can't tell me, in one hand, that you don't drink soda. And then in the other hand,
you're holding a cup of soda.
Get a case of Coca-Cola Zero from Wegmans, right? My point is you can have your cake and eat it too.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean you're going to drink the soda. You both can be okay. Maybe I'm bringing it home for my wife. You don't know. Don't judge me, right? This is what Adam Peters had to say about draft capital being given up en masse this offseason.
You take each opportunity as they come, right? And so understanding where, you know, we were able to get really good players at really good, like, important positions, there's give and take to that, right? And so we did pick 9 players last year. I think they all made the team, right? And then we had 2 rookie free agents make the team as well. So we have 5 picks this year. We could have more, you know, depending on what happens. It's almost a full complement both years. Obviously, you do want to build through the draft, and I feel that all the time. But understanding when you can get, you know, a premier corner, a premier receiver, a premier left tackle, those are things you have to really look into. And we just felt that was the best move for us.
So that's a really interesting way to think about this that I have not considered. We'll get back to the idea of pitting the two against one another, building through the draft and all the trades they're making where they give up picks. But the math that he just used, if you notice, that was kind of a subtle thing. He goes, we had a full allotment of picks. They all made the team, right? Everyone goes, yeah. So that's 9 guys. We had 2 free agents that we didn't draft make the team, right? Yeah. Okay. That's 11 guys. And then he didn't spell it out this way, but I think this is what he was suggesting. We're going to make another 6 picks, maybe more, but as of right now, another 6 picks, 5 picks this draft. So let's say it's 15, 16 picks. That's if they don't trade back. How many picks do you get to start a draft every year?
7.
Okay.
Right before you start doing it.
Times 2, how many? If you have 2 full draft classes, how many players do you add over 2 years?
14.
He's saying we'll have 15 or 16 even if we don't trade back, basically, is what he's suggesting. So he said we'll have 2 drafts worth of players. Now, I don't think that's apples to apples because respectfully...
Yeah, that's some colorful accounting.
Yeah, when you are going with 2 undrafted free agents last year and then of your 5 picks this year, you know, 2 are going to be effectively 7th round picks. Having 6 7th rounders is not the same as having a pick in every single round 1 through 6. So... The accounting that he's doing doesn't work that well.
Yeah, and even, you know, I'm making up a name. One of the undrafted free agents, name your guy, whoever it is, he guaranteed to make it year over year? You're probably trying to do better than that guy with a roster that you're inheriting that was devoid of talent.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? So there's no guarantee that the 7th rounder that cracked the squad last year is still there. I mean, you know, obviously on an individual basis you feel for that guy, but that's life at the fringe part of the league. So I understand what he's doing. He's offering a different perspective, and there is some merit to that. I mean, to me, the thing that you could say, and he's smarter than me, he knows what he's doing, is we all have the same amount of allotment capital, and all we're doing is pulling different levers to make the football team better. So I know they have this desperation to hold on to the, we're building through the draft, I promise that's what we're doing. You could totally say, we saw great opportunities to make the football team better, and he did that to a degree.
Yeah, I think that's what he said.
But like... sometimes it's salary cap. Sometimes we use a draft pick to you know, not just in the conventional way, which is the draft a 21-year-old. Sometimes we have a more proven commodity.
And, well, here's the quiet the draft. Part that he can't say out loud. There is no young talent on this team that we inherited.
And that's it.
We don't have players developing that will become household names or stars. And because of that, we have to go get those guys externally from outside our building. And the only asset we really have to do that right now, to do it quickly anyway,
because
you could do it in free agency, but now you're just picking through who's available, is to trade. So I think it is true that he could both be draft first, free agency, and trade second, and also have been way more aggressive on the trade market early as a general manager than maybe in a perfect world he'd like to. Because his number one goal is to win football games. His number two goal is probably to be true to his cultural philosophy. And maybe someone would argue with that. Like, I read the book that Bill Walsh wrote, The Score Will Take Care of Itself, and I guarantee you he would argue with that. He would say, no. The number one thing you do is lay out your basically your morals as a coach, your foundational philosophies and your paradigms, and you stick to those, and everything else will eventually happen. Winning does not supersede that. You cannot bend to win. But I think Peters has shown he will bend a bit here on this philosophy, or that he's writing it in pencil, not pen. And if you want to scream it into a megaphone for everyone to hear, because it's a nice thing to say, we're going to build through the draft, we're going to go get the kids in the draft, then you could do some funny accounting, which I think is what he's kind of doing.
Right.
Hey, I'm giving you two draft classes over 2 years. We're going to have 16, 17 players. He also hinted at the possibility they could absolutely trade back, which I think is almost a lock at this point.
Yeah, I think it's offer dependent, but yeah, I think that's the plan going in, right?
Imagine if they move back twice, and now you've got a few third-round picks and a couple of fourth-round picks. They're going to have a sizable draft class to add to this. Maybe it's devoid of the star in the next year or two, unless you hit a real home run that nobody sees coming. But I think the quantity is what he's talking about more than the quality. Like, look at all these players. We only have 53 spots. We're going to have 16 or 17 of them that we've brought in two draft classes, basically. Which, I understand that thinking. I wouldn't even try to explain it away, though. I don't think you have to waste your time with that. I know there's a fan somewhere that needs to hear it because they just want to know that you care about the draft so much. And I'm probably the opposite, where I'm wearing the bleep them pick shirt. But I think all you have to say is, it is really hard in this league to get a top five left tackle. And I got one for you this offseason. Jaden will benefit from it. It's really hard in this league to have a great cornerback. And while I'm not so sure that they have one, at this point, they think they do. The cornerback that they need to be great, they had to trade some picks.
Yeah, because you end up having to sort of knock the free agent market and the guys that are in it. But the between the lines reading is, guys, just look at who's in free agency. Now, cornerback was different this year. There was actually some players that I thought were difference makers. And again, I'm as expert as anybody else that reads the articles that you guys can read. But you know what I mean? Like, there were some names where you go, hey, at a pretty decent cost, DJ Reed could help you, and you can kind of go down your list. Carlton Davis from Detroit and a few others. There were no premium pass rushers. There were no premium left tackles. Like, last year, their best left tackle was Tyron Smith, who was 38 years old, who took up a few million bucks to go try to win one more time. Premium position players at the most important spots, tackle is one of them, are simply not available via conventional means. And now, if you want one, you're probably going to have to draft in the top half of the first round to get a guy that, again, guys emerge all the time, whether it's a second rounder or somebody in the mid rounds that turns out to be a star left tackle, whatever. But the point is, through conventional means, these guys are not available. We have to do unconventional. You end up running down the free agent market. He doesn't want to do that. He's too nice of a guy trying to treat people well. But that's the between the line subtext here, is there isn't anybody good via normal means.
My job is to protect Jaden Daniels, people. I went and got Laremy Tunsil to do that. You're going to have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Because whoever I was drafting at 29 and beyond was not going to be Laremy Tunsil early on. And I'm trying to make sure that Jaden Daniels plays 17 games. Because if that happens, you got a chance to win 12 of them every single year, probably. And I think that's where his thinking is right now. He did, as I mentioned, at least hint at the possibility of trading back when he talked about adding more picks. This was Adam Peters meeting today at the owners' meetings with the local media on the potential of draft day trades.
You know, that's certainly something that we'll consider. We'll consider everything, trading up, trading down. We always do. With trading down, you have to have somebody who wants to trade up, And so I always say, I'd love to trade down all the time, but there has to be somebody else that wants to trade up, and it has to be the right deal. And how far do you want to go back? And all those different things you take into account. Who's there on the board, right? Is there just one player on the board that you want? And if that's the case, and maybe you think twice about trading back, because, but if you have five players on the board that you really like, you can trade back a few picks, and then you can just pick one of those. And I think, with what we did in free agency and through the trades, we have the optionality to really do anything at 29, which we feel really good about.
Until he said 29, Darius could have been playing a clip from 1 year earlier.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of Adam Peters, who's great as a GM. He says very little, and he gives you almost nothing. He kind of talks in a bigger picture way. Hey, do you guys think this year you could be a candidate to trade back? And he'll tell you, we'd always like to trade back, but it takes this. I like that he gives very little. They operate in the shadows. No one really ever knows what they're doing. The Laremy Tunsil deal happens, and not a single person has linked them to Houston or Tunsil at any point. I like how he operates in that regard. But I would bet on them trading back. Because I think at 29, you're deep enough in the first round, just a couple of picks from the end of that round, where someone's willing to come up to get that extra year of whatever player they draft. if it's an edge, if it's a tackle, if it's a receiver. I doubt it's a quarterback, but I guess it could be. I think Lamar Jackson, who was the last pick of the first round by Baltimore. The Ravens went up. They weren't sold on him. Nobody knew he was about to be a multi-time MVP at all. But the Ravens said, well, if we're taking a QB, let's make sure we get him in round one rather than a handful of picks from now, because we get the fifth-year option and we extend the window of him being cheap, basically. You could do that at every single position. So that's why I think at 29, it is actually a pretty good range to possibly try to move back a few slots.
I think it is, too. And the scenario that I could see, just sort of playing that out, is if there's one of these premium spots where they still have a pretty glaring hole, thinking about a defensive end, whether it's Mike Green from Marshall or you could pick your guy, James Pierce from Tennessee, that they love and doesn't go where they think he's going to go. Like, they got him pegged. He's going to, I'm making this up, he's going to...
If they think he's going 14th overall.
Yeah, he's going to Miami at 17. I don't even know if that's their pick. But, like, he's going there. And it doesn't happen. You go, actually, we don't really need to trade back. We'll just do this. But I think probably if it plays out the way that they think it's going to, they'll go, we're probably better off, instead of just picking the next defensive end on the list, if there's a drop-off in our minds, we'll go back and, it be in the mid-second rounds, probably maybe pick up a third rounder this year or the like. We're not going to get a king's ransom for 29, but we'll get a nice haul. And that nice haul is worth more to us on a roster that just needs positive bodies at this point than where they are.
Dan Quinn speaks tomorrow, so we'll have plenty of content from him on tomorrow's show. But there is more coming from Peters. We'll dissect a lot of what he had to say today on Grant and Danny. Next, though, our weekend recap. Ovi, a goal closer to Gretzky. The Nats, first win of the season. Kevin Willard is officially out. You're listening to The Fan.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay. It's a picture-perfect Monday in D.C. Absolutely beautiful. This is one of those days where, like, you want to go walk your dog. You want to go out and turn on your Odyssey app and just take a stroll with the fellas in your ears. Appreciate everybody checking us out on Grant and Danny. The Caps lost yesterday. They do a really bad job when they play the Sabres generally. They score a lot of goals against Washington, and it was an 8-5 game. But in that game, Alex Ovechkin did score and got one goal closer. It was in front of the net on a ricochet redirect off the leg, it looked like. Ovechkin, in a way that he did not score early in his career. He has continued to add to the repertoire throughout his entire time in the National Hockey League. Is now five away from immortality.
Here's a tip from Ovechkin. And a shot here from the outside. And it's in front of a score. And Alex Ovechkin got it. The tip of a shot from the left point. The great eight has 890 goals. It's 6-4. He needs five to pass Wayne Gretzky for the all-time record.
So he's four from tying. He's five from breaking the record. By the way, he's got 37 on the year in 57 games, which is astounding. But this goal yesterday kind of introduced a new fear into my worries as an anxiety-ridden sports fan.
Oh, go on.
I am now a little bit shaken by the possibility that Ovi could break the record on a goal like that. And I want it to be the clean Joe B., John Walton, wines and fires kind of shot. You know what I mean? I want a one-timer from his office. I want it to be so obvious it's Ovi. Maybe it's a breakaway and he goes forehand, backhand, and beats the goaltender. But on that one, on the call, and this is Walton's doing a great job, you have no idea that he scored because the shot was not from Alex Ovechkin. He just happened to get the last piece of it. And you get what I'm saying? I want a clean call of the Ovi goal where it's patented, it's textbook, it's just Ovi, rocket. He's done it, you know, whatever. Not the, well, let's wait a minute and see who they give this one to.
It's like, and hold on, who's raising their stick? Yeah, I see what
it's
you're
like
saying.
It's like the no-hitter being broken up with a, you know, bloop shot.
And we're all waiting for the score.
Is it an error? Is it a hit? Yeah. Is it fair or foul? Are we going to challenge it? I need Ovi's goal. And I'd never thought about this for 1 second until yesterday. Where I'm like, thank God that wasn't the one. And Walton's like, hang on now. Sammy, what'd you say down there? Like, oh. I need it to just be clean. And just, like, calling, I remember one time I was calling a game in college baseball, and the pitcher had, like, a no-hitter into the fifth, and I think it got broken up that inning or the sixth or whatever. But all I was thinking about is, oh, my God, please. Please don't have this be an awkward call.
That in-between three-hopper where the guy kind of has to go into a slide, not a full dive.
Just give me a line drive into the outfield, you know? Scorers think about this all the time.
Of course they do.
You think you want to have to go hit or error as the official scorer? There's a guy,
one of DiMaggio's in the 56-game hit streak. He's 0-3 coming into his final at bat. It's a dribbler to the right side, and no one's really sure. The whole place is looking up at the press box going, what are you going to do, dude? What are you going to do? Little hit flashes.
So I definitely think he's going to tie him. To me, that's a lock. Through nine games, he needs four goals. The breaking of the record is still kind of the line of demarcation of, I'm not so sure. What I said going into yesterday on my Caps text thread was, if he scores today, I got a feeling he'll do it. If he doesn't score today, might have to wait till next year. So I'm back on the train of five goals, nine games, Ovi will do it.
I'm in a it's happening situation. It's fate. It's meant to be. It's what he's doing. And I'm not going to say no to him at any point in time again.
He's probably also got a two-goal game in here somewhere.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Could be tomorrow. You know, it's one of these games coming up. It could be in Boston tomorrow. By the way, Ryan Leonard likely to make his NHL debut.
Hi, Ryan.
That escalated quickly.
Did it? Real quick.
Ryan Leonard was playing for Boston College last night in college hockey and going on a run. They get eliminated, unfortunately. But because they were eliminated, he was able to start negotiating with the Capitals. They put pen to paper today. I'm told he is expected, barring something unforeseen happening, to be in the lineup in Boston.
Yeah, they go to Boston.
Storybook.
Yeah.
Sports, man. He's 20 years old, the kid.
Just go down the street from where you were going to classes 10 minutes ago, right? Maybe you go to your morning comms class and check out your elective and then go play in the NHL that night. That's pretty dope.
But it feels like a multi-goal game still in the offing for Ovi.
Yeah.
And if he were to get two in any one game, now you've got eight to get three, basically, and that's a lot.
It's what it feels like for him, right? I mean, to me, I understand your point about you'd love it to be clean. I think of McGuire's 63rd, the ball, like he missed first base and it, you know, barely cleared the left field wall when he's just done nothing but hit these majestic moonshots into Big Mac land and beyond. To me, it's still so great and celebratory that it doesn't have to go as planned. I see your point and I get it. To me, like the fact that it happened as a grimy goal is, I want more of those. You know what I mean? Just to shut up every one of these stupid critics,
yes,
that has been wrong throughout, continues to be wrong, should just have to swallow the fact that he was like, you know what, this shift I'm doing? I'm going to park myself in front of the goal like a Mike Knuble 10 years ago.
Who, hey, I would love a grimy goal. I actually think that would be fitting because he did reinvent himself, because he's not a one-trick pony, because he does score in a lot of ways now. I think that would be amazing. That's a different thing, though, than did he score or was it someone else?
Was it someone else? It's like, can you imagine, by the way, if it's an Ovechkin shot, and there's a bunch of traffic in front.
That's the other thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a bunch of traffic in front, and initially it's Ovechkin's goal, and then they go, so we've got some news. They've now given that goal to Dylan Strome, who probably feels worse than anybody's ever felt.
Willie got a piece of it, right? No, what would be perfect is, obviously, from his office on the power play would be great. I think that would be, that's what the statue should eventually be outside of Capital One Arena, is Ovi with his, you know, stick ready to go, teed up, ready to deliver a rocket into the back of the net on the power play. But I think next best could be like him down low for one of the goals that he scores a ton of now, where loose puck in front, he just bangs it home and then does the celly and goes into the glass behind the cage. That would be perfect, as long as right away we can see that was eight, that was his stick, that was a goal. And this is probably just the play-by-play nerd in me. Like, this could be me and no one else who cares about this. But I just want it to be obvious. Almost as bad, to your point, would be the he shot, but was it his? And now we're debating
it. And
now
we don't know.
We're watching the tape for 3 minutes. And I want the Joe B, the Walton calls to go down in all time as just the most obvious Ovi goal off the jump.
So now that you got me fantasizing a little bit, like, what do we want? How do we want it to happen? My new favorite one is the right off the draw, where
he's good at that.
The referee has dropped the puck. It's somehow set up where that animal has sort of slid into perfect shooting position, and before anyone else has lifted a skate blade, before anyone else has moved, they're not really sure if play has begun yet or not, he has already wound and fired an absolute rocket past a goaltender that can't believe what just happened to him. And it's puck drops, goal, stoppage of time, everybody goes nuts. I think that's what I want.
So his release is ridiculous, that's obvious. But he also has this innate ability. I'm going to comp it to Drew Brees moving in the pocket as an undersized guy to find passing lanes. So Brees used to talk about this and got so much credit for this, lauded over the years. But he would navigate the pocket by like setting up in the lanes between his linemen as they were blocking one-on-one with big D linemen, because that's how he had to see. He couldn't really see over the top. It's a subtle thing, but it's amazing that he was able to do it at that level. Ovi off those draws finds these little lanes where the goalie can't really see him or can't see, they could see him, but really can't see the puck or his stick. And he finds a way to put it through these tiny little avenues.
These wee creases.
And it is just, it's a God-given, you're born with this, no wonder why you're about to get to 900, man, kind of skill. He's awesome at it. So I'll take one of those.
Yeah, I like those.
Just give me something obvious. That's all I ask for. But they got to get it going a little bit here. They've lost three in a row.
Yep.
Now, I'm not concerned because the first of the three games was kind of the most important of them. That was a get-up-for-it game when you're playing the other best team in the league, possible Stanley Cup preview. And they went to overtime on the road. I thought they played really, really well against Winnipeg. They had a lead and lost a game against the Minnesota the next time out on the road trip. This was the first dud, though. This game against the Sabres. I thought Logan Thompson played maybe his worst game of the year. It's one of the few times all season he's been bad in net. Defensively, they just weren't that good. And overall, for a home game with 10 to go in the season, as good as they are, I just thought that was a complete clunker.
Great chance to beat a bad team. Like, I know you don't have whatever Buffalo is or does has bothered them over the years and seasons, but I can't give up 8 goals at home. I can't do that, especially when it's time to start ramping up for playoff time here. Even though, you know, overall, their last, 12, 13 games, I take an 8-4 record, in that span, which is what they've done. Having lost their last three, even, you know, some of the games that they've won, they didn't look quite as crisp as they had. I understand it's human nature. You haven't been challenged in your division in the conference for a long time. Well, you're about to be. This is a great opportunity to kind of say, okay, let's reset. We can punch the mouth a couple times. Just a reminder, we ain't perfect. We still have to do things the right way at all times. I trust Carver to do that. But this reminds me of some of those Nats seasons, right? Where the Braves would be competitive through July, and then August 1st, they would fall apart, and the Nats won it by 15 games. And I would ask Mike Rizzo, hey, do you wish someone was pushing you? He'd go, no, what are you, crazy? Yeah, well, then you weren't that sharp come playoff time. I sort of wish somebody was zipping at their heels a little bit to keep that competitive juice. It's inevitable, right? You relax some. You can't help it because you're so far ahead, you kind of are turning around and stopping going, I can't even see the team behind me. If we don't win another game, we're still winning the division. You know, I understand that there's it's easy to see the finish line. You've been waiting for it. But now's the time to ramp up a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
I'll give you that excuse like a week or two ago or even right now, but that has to end.
Agreed.
This is now playoff preparation time for the best team in the Eastern Conference and maybe the best team in hockey. One of the eight, by the way, was an empty netter. A couple were on the penalty kill. So it wasn't like they just got worked over at even strength. But the point is the point. Too many goals, bad performance. I think they need a jolt. They need a little bit of a spark. I don't know if Ryan Leonard's going to provide that as a 20-year-old who was playing college hockey yesterday. But he's going to get a chance to, it sounds like, as they sign him to a contract today. And a much-anticipated debut for probably the most famous player in the world right now that is not in the NHL. Certainly one of the top prospects in the world that is not in the NHL as he makes his debut for the Caps likely tomorrow night. You mentioned the Nats. We'll get into them and the exit of Kevin Willard. Much talked about. It happened, and in the most fitting fashion. In the middle of the night, and he told his players over Zoom, keep doing you, Kev. You're listening to Grant and Danny. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Coming up in 15 minutes, Tony Massenburg, former Maryland star who played well over a decade in the NBA, going to give us his thoughts on what's going on after Kevin Willard's exit and who should be the next head coach for the Terps. But speaking of which, we did the show Friday knowing it was likely that Willard was out. Seemed like a formality at that point, almost a certainty. And it happened. And fittingly, it happened in the middle of the night. It happened that he didn't tell his players first, according to a report, that they were informed ultimately via Zoom. All that's missing was the Mayflower trucks. And you know how I feel about this, Danny. I think the leaving is not the problem. Even the leaving, I'd like to not have a Zoom call about it. I'd like to have a team meeting. Even the leaving in the middle of the night, I think there's better ways to do it. The problem for me was always that he just lit fire to everything on his way out, that it's harder to get a great coach because of all the terrible things he said about the program publicly. If you're going to air out the dirty laundry of the family, you can't leave the family right after that.
Yeah, it's a selfish me-first weasel move from a selfish me-first weasel who was always, at all times, even when Maryland fans incorrectly, again, you were so incorrect, were pumping their fists because he was airing out the quote-unquote dirty laundry, stuff that needed to be said about the program. So it's like your ex-girlfriend said, hey, you're out of shape, you're lazy, and you're stupid. Those things may be true and needed to be said. Still kind of a bitchy way to do it. And that's exactly what he did. He did a self-serving, me-first deal where there's a bunch of kerosene that he dumped, holding a lit match going, I'll drop it. Whether either you do exactly what I'm saying and I'll holster the match, or I'm going to Villanova who maybe gives me those things. That's what he was doing all the time. It was always a self-serving move to capitalize on the best season that he ever had. He deserves credit for that season, by the way. But he also showed you exactly who he was.
He wanted to be back in the Big East.
Yeah.
He wanted to be at a school where they care about basketball and nothing else. And he got those things at Villanova. It's a great job, by the way. I think you can make the case. It's
really good.
That's one of the 10 best jobs in America. I've seen some debate from Maryland fans about whether it's a better job. I think that's silly. This is a much better job. That isn't the conversation that needs to be had, though. There's only two ways to go. You can either crush Willard for how he handled everything, starting with the infamous press conference, or you can kind of talk about what's next for the program. And I think in that regard, and we can talk to Tony Massenburg about this coming up in a bit, this sets you back years. It just does. When you lose a head coach with the momentum that they had in this era, this portal, free agency, lack of loyalty era, you're cooked. I was listening to who was on the Junks today talking about this. They had suggested that Rodney Rice, Jeff Ehrman, the newsbreaker, that Rodney Rice might be the one guy that would come back among the Crab Five to be a starter for them this year. He's already in the portal, I just saw Toby say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Gillespie or one of these dudes is back, but essentially the Crab Five is gone. I bet you the top guys in your rotation beyond that, not that there were a ton of them, but those guys will also transfer. And here's the bigger problem. The portal's open, so you were already 22 miles into the 26-mile marathon at trying to land the transfers from everywhere else to come to Maryland, and you would have been able to get, you know, in a normal end of season where he doesn't act like a fool and he's still here, you'd be able to lure over two or three really good players now because you're a top 20 team in America going into next season or whatever. That's not happening. All those transfers are gone. All of the players you've been recruiting at the high school level no longer come here because they were indebted to Willard or had a relationship with him more than the school itself that they've never been to at this point. So in every way you look, I mean, this is a debacle of epic proportions where 3-4 years from now, you're going to be hopefully finally picking up the final pieces.
This is one of those crossroad times for the university. And again, I think Willard's a twerp, who, and I've been very clear about how I feel. So to me, though, this is a great opportunity to realize that you've got to go through some pain here. The things that he said about you are right. The things that a lot of people have said about you are right.
He's just the wrong guy to have said it.
Yeah.
But they are look-in-the-mirror moments. Let's learn from this.
Behind the scenes, the way you're supposed to do it like an adult, not a selfish guy that just threw, you know, made yourself the story while this great group of kids was on the best run the school's had in 10 years plus. But as you went about this, we need to figure out what we are, because you've been wrong for every year. Every day you wake up and get out of bed, you've been incorrect about what you think you are. You're a football school, despite the results that say you're not. And the way that the money comes in and the revenue that hasn't been there, the attendance that hasn't been there. There's no casual fan, to my point, in Northern Virginia that's going, you know what we should do tonight? Let's drive around the Beltway in rush hour traffic and go to a Maryland game.
Hang on. You're saying, though, you're not saying they're a football school. You're saying they're claiming to be one.
They thought they were. They
Correct.
Went to the Big Ten.
I just want to be clear about that.
That was their deal.
They're not a football school.
No, they're
You're
not.
Saying they're pretending and moonlighting like one.
Yeah, they pretended to be one. And
yeah, they're a basketball school, and they need to acknowledge.
Yeah, or don't, by the way, and continue to do this every few years. You'll have another Willard. You have another enemy. You'll have somebody else that can't do it. You either find a guy that's not in demand that nobody else wants if they have a good year, or you find some silver bullet Gary Williams type lifer that already loves the school and has an affinity to come in and rescue from the depths of hell, go through some terrible times, and build you a program. I don't know if that's possible in this kind of day and age. So you're going to be doing this dance for a while unless you make some fundamental changes to how you go about your business. And I don't know that they will.
Well, here's the other problem about when he leaves. In addition to all of the portal issues that I talked about and the recruiting setbacks, and those are obvious, it's so late in the game in terms of the coaching carousel.
Yeah.
You're pretty screwed. I mean, a lot of the qualified coaches that you would want are no longer available. Now, there are a couple of local options. I don't want Tony Skin to leave Mason as someone who went there and really enjoys where the Patriots are in their build. I think he's awesome. He would make sense to me. But a Skin from Mason, a Simpkins who's got the Maryland ties at American, you know, those are the types of hires now that I think you have to probably look at locally. There are some other names nationally we could talk about with Tony Massenberg, but this couldn't have happened. The timing of all of it just couldn't be worse, just in terms of replacing a coach. Oh, by the way, who's your AD? Who is even negotiating and figuring this out? You don't even have an athletic director. Seems like a problem as well. Coming up at 3:25, Zach Taylor, the coach of the Bengals, was asked about if Trey Hendrickson is going to be in Cincinnati at the start of the year if he's still available. I think that answer will be interesting to Commanders fans. But Tony Massenberg does join us next on GND here on The Fan.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.